Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba, Asheda, Mojuba, Aluwa, Mi, Apolabi, Pega, Mojuba, Araba, Mi, Adesanya, Awuyade, Mojuba, Ogute, Compound, Ode, Remo, Mojuba, Baba, Mojuba, Yeye, Mojuba, Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba, Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba, Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe-o.
Peace, Dr. Jones. Could you hear anything I said?
No, ma'am. Not at all.
Oh, my. Okay, okay. I'm sorry, everybody. I got this new phone, and I'm used to my old one. So how are you doing today, Dr. Jones?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm maintaining, trying to stay focused on what's important.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot going on, and it seems like we may have been missing some things that were right in our faces. What I was saying, unfortunately, it didn't come across because I was muted, is that as we begin to put this foundation and start to build the walls to this thing, it seems like there are things that we may be missing that very well may be right in our faces. For instance, the post that I made about the casual killing act, and it seems as though that law, even though it is very barbaric, very out of date, very much supposedly not a part of our culture and who we are, it seems as though that's exactly what's happening with a lot of the murders that we're seeing on our streets. So, you know, I'm looking forward to continuing these dialogues, getting more people on board to look at the things that we need to kind of start to dissect so that we can rebuild this thing and put this thing back together in a way that is going to allow us to be as culturally sound and positive and, I guess, self-sustaining as we know we have the capacity to be. So I yield with that. Can you introduce tonight's dialogue and let the listeners know what we're going to be talking about?
Okay. Last week we talked about dealing with this idea of this global thing. It's definitely a global thing and global issue titled Black Popular Culture. And one of the things that we know about popular culture in general is quite simply that African Americans have historically been the innovators. And we can go back as far as you want to. We can go back to Elvis Presley. A lot of our cultural developments, our style, so to speak, our words, our language, even our dress, has been the driving force behind so much of what has dominated global culture. However, we've not always profited off of it financially. We've been the innovators, and many people could say that there have been white entertainment entities that have in every way been the takers, the stealers, the thieves, and they've repackaged it. And ironically, they've often been able to sell it back to us. So in many ways, what we're talking about is the idea of Black popular culture. What is it? What does it mean? Who is it important to? And in many ways, how is it that Black popular culture, for every generation that we can point to, has been, we've been the sort of the trendsetters in regards to what's hot, what's not, and what have you as far as culture goes. And I yield to that question.
Ashe, Dr. Jones, you know, when you first brought this topic up, I thought, damn, do we have culture? Do we have, or do we just have style or swag or whatever the popular term is? So do we have a culture, considering that a lot of that was stripped away from us, or have we managed to rebuild some sort of sense of culture out here, you know, despite the obstacles that we've had to overcome?
You know, I would say without a doubt that we have culture. The very words that you were just using are indicative of our culture. You know, you know good and well that, I mean, if you even looked at the universal handshake amongst brothers, we switch that up every once in a while to, you know, to keep others from being able to do what we're doing at this present moment. They catch on, and by the time that they zig and we're zagging. So most definitely we have culture. It's in our entire being. It's how we move. It's how we think. It's how, you know, it's how we dress. It's the words that we use and what have you. The only problem that we have now, and this is one of the issues that we should definitely talk about, is quite simply the idea that the quote-unquote black popular culture that we're seeing today is not particularly representative of who we are as a people for the first time in our history. Much of what we're seeing, and we can trace this back to the advent and the introduction of, and I'm not addressing NWA necessarily at this moment, but a lot of the groups that followed in NWA within the hip-hop community. We have to remember that when hip-hop first began, we were talking about it as a genre that was utilized to speak the anger, the angst, the disappointment, the hardships that were happening within urban America. And then it became profitable. And there were very few African-Americans outside of Russell Simmons beyond their first generation, the movers and shakers within the hip-hop community. So in many ways, we have this vehicle that we know as rap music, a smaller one of the subdivisions of hip-hop culture that has in many ways been co-opted, number one. And number two, a lot of the images, a lot of the thoughts, a lot of the style, a lot of the presentation that we see occurring with rap artists, even to this very moment, are thought up in some A&R's office that we need a gangster rapper, we need a rapper that's like this, we need a rapper that's like that. And when you really break it down and you understand it that way, that here these recent images, and by recent I mean over the last, let's say, 30 years, these images have been created in the minds of people who are solely interested in marketing. They're not very interested in moving the culture forward. They're interested in padding their pockets. So what we have are young black folk who are coming out here, and they're being dressed behind the scenes. They're being told how to conduct their business behind the scenes, how to behave before the camera. Sometimes go out and get arrested, put yourself in the headlines. And this is coming almost exclusively from the someone's death, someone's idea of what is going to be the next thing that's going. So here we have folks in our community who have always been the trendsetters, and they're once again the trendsetters, but this is a faux culture that we're looking at, a faux urban culture that we're looking at, and ironically, because they are doing it based upon the credibility of those who come before them, people are mimicking them and what they're doing. And unfortunately, far too often, even our people are mimicking them and trying to copy their style and what have you. And so it's turned into a mess that is not indicative of who we are, and also a mess that is not serving the best interest of our community, which is what every musical genre that we've ever created has done. And I yield with that, Queen.
Well, now, see, you only covered hip-hop, and just look at how much detail you had to put into that definition of that particular portion of our culture, even though it has some influence on who we are, you know, beyond just hip hop. That explanation took a lot, Dr. Jones. So let me ask you this. When you said something about the characteristics of our culture in 2016 are not what they used to be. So tell me, say, from the 60s to the 70s, what were some of the characteristics that were indicative to our culture? And say from the 90s to the 2000s, some of the characteristics that came into effect then. And what do you think had an influence on the change of those characteristics?
You know, if we're going to talk, start our discussion talking about the 60s and 70s, let's be very, very, very clear. And that clarity should point us to the hardest working man in show business, James Brown, who sums up in many ways late 60s political culture by quite simply saying, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. We're very nationalistic in the 1960s. Our music, our dress, from the Afro to everything else, is going to be indicative and representative of that. Hold on 1 second.
Okay. So for those who are listening on your phone, if you would like to be a part of the conversation, you don't have to hold back. Just push one, and we will bring you in the queue to speak. So just realize that you are a key part of the dialogue that we have here on Sign of the Times, and we really do want to hear what you have to say, because it may prompt something that we haven't even thought of. So, again, please push one if you are listening on your phone. If you're listening on the computer, the number to dial is 917-889-8059, 917-889-8059. And I also want to send a shout-out to all of my homies and homettes who grieved with me when I lost my cell phone and had to put her to rest the other day. As you can see, I have been blessed to recover from my grieving process, and we do have a new phone. So, well, it's not new, but it's new to me, so I guess that counts. But I just wanted to send a shout-out to everybody who cried along with me and who sent me well wishes, and even those who offered to make a contribution towards the acquisition of a new phone for me. So I just wanted to let everybody know I do have a new phone, another phone, and she is working marvelously. So thanks you everybody for you know, sending me that positive energy. I needed it.
Okay, Queen, I'm back. I'm sorry about that. A certified mail delivery or something I had to sign for. But when we're talking about that late 60s, we have to remember that that period of time is historically known as the Black Power era, and our music replicated that. Even our DJs who were on the radio were nationalistic, were politicized, and what have you. James Brown, once again, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And going forth from there, we have many of the quote-unquote what we would term funk bands going forward, sending out what could only be termed highly nationalistic music, rhetoric, and what have you. We have Parliament, we have Funkadelic, we're going to have the Ohio Players. We're going to have a whole host of individuals, Earth, Wind, and Fire, the elements, who are going to be advancing, when you listen to it, what could only be termed uplifting music, positive music, music about love, aimed at transporting our people from one place to another place. And when we fast forward and we look at probably the most significant change that we're going to have, and that is quite simply that moment from the generation of hip hop. And of course, hip hop is and always will be laying very heavily upon the funk and R&B. We got to remember that George Clinton is the most sampled. George Clinton and James Brown are the two most sampled artists in the history of hip-hop. But I think that the most notable change that we're going to see during that time period is quite simply the idea, the understanding that hip-hop is now profitable, that hip-hop is not a fad. And unfortunately for our community, and it's one of the things that you could almost say predictably as well for our community, is quite simply that others are going to capitalize upon it monetarily. And it's there that we begin to see a very clear understanding from Hollywood, from the big screen and the small screen, especially the small screen television, that documenting Black lives matters very much financially.
Mm-hmm.
We can go back and we can look at the what is now, we should recognize now as somewhat of a groundbreaking show for what it did, and that is The Real World on MTV. If we look at The Real World, we're seeing the show that in many ways is going to birth much of this god-awful reality TV that we see right now that is documenting and following Black folk around as they act a fool. Doug D once said this about hip-hop, about rap music in particular, and I think that it's applicable to all aspects of Black popular culture that are being beamed around the globe. And, yes, they're going around the globe. Make no mistake about that. But he says that hip-hop is actually Black America's CNN. You know, and if you want to know what's happening in Black America during the mid to late 80s, you listened to hip-hop. You want to know about this place called Compton, you listen to hip-hop. You want to hear, listen to Oakland, Too Short. New York, you can listen to Rakim. So they were, in many ways, giving us almost a blow-by-blow report of what is going on within those respective urban areas. But at the exact same time, for those outside of our community, hip-hop serves, and by extension, what we know as reality TV now, serves a different purpose. And that purpose was best summed up by KRS-One of Boogie Down Productions. KRS-One makes this very cryptic statement where he titles his album Edutainment. And it was his way of saying that what hip-hop culture actually is a combination of education and entertainment. And my thinking on that is, number one, he's absolutely correct. But number two, the reality is that for those outside of our community, they're observing, digesting, consuming and digesting all of these cultural images that have that are not necessarily true. And they're, number one, going to be entertained by it, but also, number two, they're going to be, quote, unquote, miseducated by it as well. And it leads to a situation where they feel that they know us because they've seen these absurd caricatures. They've seen these absurd caricatures of how Black folk, quote, unquote, live. So they feel as if they know us, truly not knowing that what they're seeing is the equivalent of a parody, a spoof about Black life. And contemporarily, when you're talking about these housewives shows, these Love and Hip Hop shows and what have you, quite possibly the saddest thing about it is that so many of our people don't recognize them as being caricatures and spoofs about what Black life is. And they've in many ways tried to integrate many of the things that they see in these shows, which are invariably negative images and ways of behaving and what have you. They've taken those and they've integrated them into their lives as if they are valid, authentic culture. So now you have a situation where you have people patterning their lives after something that was solely created because it was over the top and was being utilized to, in every way, make money. So what we know is our cultural ecosystem has been out of balance at least since the late 1980s. And I yield to that, Queen. Speaking, Queen, we can't hear you.
I apologize, Dr. Jones. I got knocked off.
Okay.
Okay, so as we look at reality TV shows, and we talk about, you know, we always talk about sincerity, integrity, and accountability. We've talked about before that they don't necessarily feel like they owe us anything as a community. So can we guilt them into some sort of conscience? Do you really think that they just don't care, or is it that they're being paid to not care?
Okay, you're asking about the quote-unquote participants in the show?
Yes.
You know, the thing is that and we run into this consistently. From their perspective, if we were to put ourselves in their shoes, they would ask us a very interesting question, and that would be, what has the Black community given them? Now, of course, they're talking about this and asking this purely from an economic or capitalistic position. And the truth of the matter is that the answer would have to be nothing. So these are people who have in many ways got it within themselves to recognize everything as being a job. You know, and as long as it's, you know, as long as it's paying. Who was it, Hattie Butterfly McQueen or Hattie McDaniel, who once said, I'd rather play a maid than be a maid? So you're talking about people whose credibility whose morality, whose conscience can be bought and paid for. And as a result of that, there is no guilting such people into anything, because they're sold to the highest bidder. And you can rest assured that they understand, and they've had ample opportunities to recognize and realize this, and have been warned and cautioned, I guarantee you, by agents and what have you. And that is quite simply that it is in your best interest to always remain blasé politically, if not totally detached from politics, because they recognize very well, they know that there's 1,000 of them, if not 100,000 of them, waiting outside the door who would do the exact same thing that they're doing for the same money. So they're going to be easily replaced. So I don't see a guilting of them in any way. They're living in a world where you could almost create a picture of a cat jumping up against jumping onto somebody or a wall with all claws and whatever extended. They're holding on for dear life because they recognize that there is no other venue, no other place where uneducated people can get up and offer the most boorish and worst behavior that one could ever imagine and instantaneously achieve at least some modicum of superstardom. They're invited to the parties to be with the worst people. They're invited to, you know, everything that you can imagine. They're getting all of the bells and whistles. And they know that once this gravy train is over, ain't no getting back on it. So we have nothing to offer such people. You know, it's sort of like what can we really offer a pimp at the height of his game if his total value system is predicated upon making money? Why should he go to church? Why should he leave the game? And, of course, we have a million reasons why he should, but none of them have to do with economics. All of them have to do with morality, doing good by your people and what have you. Well, that's not their value system. And we don't have anything that can speak to their value system, because if they're determined to go to the highest bidder, we'll never be able to bid, at least monetarily, in that way. Now, they may come to us, back to us, and apologize once the gravy train ends. But until they get thrown off of that gravy train, they're not going anywhere. And that's just the reality of it.
Okay. Well, I apologize. Did you have an article that you wanted to share with the listeners on the topic? Okay.
Not at all.
Okay. Okay, so Dr. Jones, I have to go back to that question about culture then. If there's no way to rattle these people's cages, whether it be through protest or, you know, I guess theoretically revoking their black card or hood card or whatever, then how can we in turn say that we truly have a culture? Because people who have culture, they don't embarrass their parents. They don't do anything because they know that it reflects on not only them, but any and everybody that surrounds and is around them. Now, I'm not to say that those people don't do, you know, nasty, funky stuff, because we all know they do. But, you know, especially the Asian community, I think that they have what we used to have, you know, culturally and traditionally and inheritance-wise. There's a lot of culture still there, and that's why they're able to control group polls and control what happens in their community to a certain extent. I mean, we talked about Chinatown. It's a perfect example of how well, even though some of them can't stand each other probably, they know how to go out here and get this money. So if there's no accountability, how can we really say that we have a culture?
Well, you know, the thing is that however you live and breed and navigate the world, that's culture. Now, we can argue as to if we have a functional culture, which I don't believe that we do. We have a dysfunctional culture. And we have to remember that whenever we're talking about African Americans, whenever we're talking about issues such as this, that it's always best to go ahead and begin the discussion with the realization and recognition, quite simply, that African Americans hate themselves. And until we really understand the phenomenal nature of that statement right there, that we actually do hate ourselves, nothing else is going to make very much sense. So in saying that, and probably the greatest analogy that one could ever imagine is quite simply that when racial segregation finally was beginning to hit its death knell in the early 1970s, African Americans hurried, those who had any means, they hurried to leave the inner city as if it was escape from New York. Whereas a proper consideration and viewing of what was going on at that moment should have been, listen, we're going to build up our own communities, X, Y, and Z. No, the idea became, yo, how quickly can I get out of here? And in many ways, that's what you're seeing from many African Americans culturally. The idea of how soon can I get away from these niggas? And what is the path to getting away from these niggas? And the path is, quite simply, to be more outrageous, to be more salacious, to be more damaging, to be so damaging and out of your mind that someone would actually pay you to go on stage on before camera and behave that way. You know, let's be honest about it, that those who are caring, the vast majority, I would put it at 80%, and that's being very generous. It's probably more like 95%. But let's say 80% of African Americans who are in the limelight culturally are doing negative things that have negatively impacted African Americans, even it being an image that they're portraying. Now, if we follow that thought, let's just be honest about it, that next generation that is looking at them who have made it and they're aspiring to get out of their situation, they're more than willing to go ahead and replicate what they've seen happen the generation before them. And in many ways, if they're not careful, they're going to believe in their heart of hearts that what they're actually doing is moving forward the idea of black culture. And that ties in all the way back to a misunderstanding, a miscalibration, a ignorance, so to speak, of how black folk used to live before this very moment. People are actually believing that Stevie J and Scrap, that all of these reality stars are suitable images for African-American male and African-American manhood because they don't have anything else to bounce it off of. I mean, consider even the dress and the style of African-American men and women. What is a well-dressed man nowadays versus what we see on a daily basis where our people are willing to present themselves in any way possible? And it's probably the greatest sense that we have what could best be termed no cultural literacy, because we don't know what came before us. So these things that we have, these studios and what have you, presenting as a black culture, black fair, black music even, that passes as authentic black culture, whereas there are a few of us who recognize that that's laughable because it has nothing to do with authentic black culture. It's in many ways embarrassing. And I yield with that, Queen.
Yeah, my daughter and I were talking about the video that's out where the sister's beating her 16-year-old daughter. And she beat the fool out this girl based on the fact that culturally, a lot of our young people feel like it's okay that they show their behind on Facebook. Well, she broadcasted it live on Facebook, and she beat the stool out this little girl. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but, you know, my daughter and I were talking about the fact that video is going to go around the world. And people around the world are probably thinking that we as African people in the U.S. are about the most backwards you know what that we could possibly be. It's not enough that the state is oppressing us. It's not enough that we've got mass incarceration and police murder in the street. Here it is that in our own house where we're supposed to always have peace. I've raised my children with this concept that if I don't have peace nowhere else, I'm going to have peace in my house. You know, I don't care what it is, what's going on outside. I don't care what Becky Sue and your friends and them are going through. No, when you come in here, it's yes, ma'am, to me, and you take care of your business, and I don't care what your peers are doing, because if I had not been that way, their peers and society would have had more impact on them than they already did. Like, it wasn't easy, like, maintaining that respect and that discipline to where, no, we don't tolerate, we don't fight each other, we don't curse each other, we don't, talk about one another behind each other's back, which I've seen us do culturally. We don't do that in the house. So, you know, like I said, it's not enough that the state is oppressing us. Here it is that this woman has beat her daughter on an international level, and people around the world must think we're the most backwards people ever. So what do you think about that, Dr. Jones?
I mean, you're absolutely correct. I mean, the only thing that I would add to that is that I would replace the word think with know. Because what people see becomes their reality. You know, one of the proudest moments for me, for my generation, was when I was on a train in Amsterdam. I was on my way to the Central District, what they call the Red Light District. I had a layover. It was during the day. I had a layover for a flight. So, you know, we headed down to the Central District. And as we're on the train, I was absolutely positively amazed. And I wrote about this in O'Rooney. I just sat there and looked at the buildings. And to my amazement, 70% of the buildings that they had in Amsterdam between the Central District and the airport had graffiti upon it. And I'm just gazing at this and trying to process what this actually means. And a girl, 20, 22, 23 years old, she looked at me and she said, "You must be a B-boy." And I was like, wow, I haven't heard the term B-boy in a long time. And what that meant for me was quite simply that the culture that was cultivated and created by black and brown people in the mid to late 70s had made its way all the way across the Atlantic Ocean to Amsterdam. They were doing hip-hop, graffiti, and what have you there. So I say that to say this, cultural messages, and it goes back to the idea of what I was talking about with KRS-One and the construct of edutainment, that people outside of our community, when they are engaging with these images, they're getting two things. They're getting what they consider to be an education, which, like the video you're talking about, it taught people something. That was a lesson about black folk, how we behave. And it's also entertaining to them so they don't get tired of digesting it. And when you're consistently sending forth these images that are totally negative images, images that no sane, rational people would want to have outside of their home, let alone outside of their land, you're looking at a cheapening of the brand. You're looking at a cheapening of what it means to be black in America. And make no mistake about it, it is what it means to be black in America. We often wonder why continental Africans come to this nation with what we term an arrogance, a haughtiness. Well, the reason that they have that is quite simply that they have in their midst what they refer to. They have two forms, they have several forms of entertainment, but the two prominent and most applicable here, they have these movies that they call Nollywood movies, and they're basically Nigerian Hollywood. But then they also have these other movies called ex-nigga movies. And it's the hood movies like Menace to Society and, you know, And somehow they figured out how to put 150 movies on one disc. It's one of the most amazing things that you'll ever see. But they're digesting these same images. You know, it is not, you know, you have to remember that within every people, you're going to have a rogue class of individuals who are trying to be the criminal underground. Every land that I've gone to, those people have been patterning themselves after what they consider to be authentic black culture, gangster rap, what have you. And so that message of who we are has been transmitted long before they ever even meet one of us. So when they come in contact with us, they have all of these stereotypical views in their heads and in their minds right now. Henry Louis Gates, who's an individual that I'm not particularly, you know, a fan of. But Gates tells this story that he was going to an Asian country or what have you. And, you know, of course, they had a limo there. They had a driver and what have you to pick them up. And Gates says that he gets off the plane and he makes his way and he finds the guy that's supposed to drive him. And they go ahead and they drive, take him to the university or venue where he's supposed to be. And there's a party of individuals waiting to greet him. And Gates talks about getting out of the car. And the head of the delegation walks up to him, extends his hand, and says, "What's up, my nigga?"
Hmm.
Now, this is Skip Gates. You know what I'm saying? Skip Gates probably never been called a nigga in his life, at least not since he became an Ivy League professor.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they didn't mean any harm by it. They're just conforming to the cultural messages that have been sent before Gates got there, and that is quite simply
mm-hmm.
that black people are niggas, and it don't mean that necessarily in the endearing sense. If we tried to flip the word for it, in many ways, our cultural messages that we're sending are reverberating and being accepted and being believed around the country. I mean, you look at the disdain and the loathing that a figure like Michelle Obama has experienced. One of the problems with Michelle Obama is quite simply all of these negative images that she has most certainly not contributed to at all have gone forth before her for decades, if not centuries, that black women are hoes, black women are loose. Okay? So when you're dealing with this lineage, this heritage of prejudice, discrimination, and even racism that we have to face around the globe, it makes it a little easier to understand why no one around the globe, no one within the continental United States of America respects persons of African, respects African Americans, because I can't say persons of African descent, because even continental Africans usually don't respect us because of what we projected out there.
But everybody and their mama out here that's supposedly conscious, that's the first thing they holler is about our African roots. So where's the balance?
There is no balance. You know, the vast majority of individuals who are screaming about Africa, 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 many of those individuals have never been there. You know, I think about a great lyric that Ice Cube had once. Yeah, you talk about Africa, I stare at you because we ain't got it too good in America. Our people have a fanciful utopian view that, and it comes from a very heightened sense of arrogance. And that arrogance is something that I would argue we inherited by being close to white folk for so long. But it is quite simply that we're going to go back to Africa and we're getting ready to straighten it out. Wholly failing to realize that Africa is full of brilliant, educated people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of my colleagues, Miriamma Ross, she was one of the only three African Americans who lived in this city called Kumasi. But Dr. Ross, I asked her, I said, you know, what should I expect? Because at the moment I was on the verge of relocating to Ghana. And she said, don't come here. You know, I asked her, what do I owe Africa? She said, you don't owe Africa anything. said, don't come here thinking that you're going to save Africa, that you're going to heal Africa. Could it possibly be that you're what needs to be healed as a result of your entire existence being in the West? The
mm-hmm.
fact that y'all don't know how to even relax. You're always tense. You're rushing from this to that. And so when you look at developing a balance as far as Africa goes, and when it's in many ways, I'm kind of laughing, it's in many ways preposterous that so many of our people talk about Africa. You know, I'm unsure if, you know, they've been to the Raven Simone School of Geography and don't realize that Africa is such a diverse continent with so many different languages, so many different people, worldviews, and cultures. You know,
mm-hmm.
there is historically been an absence of cultural unity amongst Africans. And here you're going to throw us in the midst. Lord knows you're getting ready to have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about the fact that we hate each other, I mean, and we hate ourselves, it's disheartening to hear that, because it's true. And, you know, so part of us taking our power back is, I guess, us relearning how to love ourselves again. And, you know, it sounds so simple. It sounds really easy. Like, you know, if you give love, you receive love. No, that's not necessarily always the case, because for generation after generation, we've been victimized and targeted by, you know, whatever outside influences felt like they could destroy and rip that away from us. Maybe as we, you know, as I said, continue these dialogues, I'm trying to figure out how we can be able to say that we've made some progress by the end of this year. How have we began to heal as a community through the work here on Sign of the Times, through manhood, race, and culture, through the freedom movement? How are we going to really be able to measure our successes if the hate is so prominent and the negativity is so off balance right now? How are we ever going to be able to measure when we are doing something that is going to help reactivate our culture, if you will?
I mean, you're talking about measuring an intangible thing, which is culture. I think that quite possibly the best thing that we could ever do is to heal ourselves individually, get our minds together individually, take care of ourselves individually. And as the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad once said to Malcolm X, be that clean glass. And if you're that clean glass, you don't necessarily even have to point out to people that they have a dirty glass. Just show them your clean glass. Show them your standard of living. Show them your value system. Show them how you actually live. That's how I think that we begin to turn this thing around. I have an uncle, my mother's oldest brother, Leon, and he is a Bahaya. I don't know if you know what a Bahaya is, but it's like a religious
Mm-mm.
Set. It's a religious set where they follow the teachings of some guy who has written all of these books and what have you. But my Uncle Leon, when he comes into a room, he brings peace and calm with him. It's one of the dopest, amazing things that I have ever experienced. And it's the thing that I pursue. That's what I want to be able to do. I want to be so grounded in whatever it is that he's grounded in, which I know is his soul, his spirit. I want to be grounded to the point where I can do that. And I believe that that is sort of winning for our people, the ability to be so grounded and to be so centered in goodness and positivity that it affects those who are around you. And it also repels those who disdain that and hate that. So, you know, I think that's going to be winning for us, at least for the time being. You know, I believe it was Audre Lorde who made the great comment that you can't tear down the master's house using the master's tools. And I believe that needs to become a very, almost a siren call for our people. Because quite simply, we haven't done a very good job of taking care of what we need to take care of. And I yield with that one.
Ashe, we're at the top of the hour. Again, for those who are listening on your phone, please push 1 if you would like to come into queue. For those who are listening on the internet, please dial in at 917-889-8059. 917-889-8059 is the call-in number. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity, that's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Third had been gunned down in a Walmart, but killing black people seems to be the pig hallmark. And Mike Brown, too, they left him lying dead for hours, man. It's time to change the game, grab back some power. The murderous mongrels, they prey on the community. They arrest me down and kill a will, always total immunity. All cops are bastards, each and every single one. As they protect these psychopaths and they hand them back their guns, man, I'm on some Huey P shit, but I remember Fred Hampton and Mumia and Asada. Consequences for such actions, so I'm prepared to wait a bit and keep showing solidarity, but the whole system is racist and guilty of barbarity. There's no need to wait for clarity. It's pretty damn obvious. When the masses join together, there won't be no stopping us. Workers' revolution, smash the system and its henchmen. Give the perpetrators fate to sickening dimension. Pay attention, people. Storm is coming quickly. Wake up those that's near you, and if I doze off, please kick me. Pickett, Betty Jones, Roy Nelson, Timothy Russell.
Sometimes I think I'm
too many
wrong.
More to mention.
Ashe, welcome back to Sign of the Times, everyone. Tonight is Tuesday nights, where I have the honor and pleasure of having my co-host, Dr. James Jones of Manhood, Race, and Culture, join us. That was Verbs Vega, a comrade of mine out of Columbus, who has stepped up to the plate and offered that joint to be a part of the 99 Hip Hop Collective. And I love it. He's very talented, very committed to the struggle. He is of European descent, but he knows his shit as far as putting together his rhymes. You can find him on Facebook as JJ Verbs, I believe, is how he's listed. But if not, you can send me a request, and I definitely will link you up with him. So welcome back, Dr. Jones.
All right, I'm here, Queen.
Ashe. Ashe, you want to reintroduce tonight's topic for me, please?
Yeah, what we were talking about is the idea of Black popular culture and how it's manifested in its many ways, and how over the last 30 years, what we know as Black popular culture has largely been something that's emanating from either a Hollywood studio or from some music A&R office, some music company's A&R office. And it's been this image of Black popular culture that has remained and actually grown stronger over time that has largely not only impacted the entire globe, but also cheapened and damaged the brand of what it means to be Black in the eyes of others. And one could even argue that it's cheapened the idea of what it means to be Black in the eyes and the mind and the spirit of Black folk here in the continental U.S.
Okay, so we've talked about some of the realities of what we look at through hip-hop, through so-called reality TV. What should we, in 2016, have as our culture? What elements should we be investing into our community? I know you talked about us healing ourselves, but, you know, the definition of hip-hop is higher infinite power healing our people. So let's change the paradigm. Let's yin-yang on what we've got going on now and turn it into something positive. And so I yield to you, Dr. Jones. I'd like to hear your idea or plan on helping us put this thing back together, and I yield.
You know, when we talk about the idea of utilizing hip-hop culture, rap music in particular, to uplift African Americans, we need to realize that we must divest from the idea of commercial sales. We must divest from this nonsensical sing-song that we see so frequently and so often on the radio, things that are in many ways indecipherable to our people. And maybe that is a very positive thing because, quite simply, it's not offering anything that is uplifting and positive. I think that, and this is in many ways flowing from my understanding of hip-hop culture, we need to return back to the roots of what it is that hip-hop culture initially stood for. One could argue that the vast majority of today's contemporary hip-hop artists have little understanding of hip-hop. They are in many ways illiterate to African-American culture in general, and rap music in particular. I'll give you quite possibly the greatest example. Recently, during the Hip Hop Honors Award, where they honored Salt and Pepper, Lil' Kim, Missy Misdemeanor Elliott, and I know that there's one that I'm missing that I can't recall right now. However, they were performing, Lil' Kim was going to perform the classic, her classic song of Get Money. And we have Rich Homie Quan, who has been given, for whatever reason, the privilege and the right to go ahead and do Notorious B.I.G.'s verse on Get Money. And he didn't get two lines into the rhyme before he started fumbling the words. And it became very clear that it wasn't nerves. It was the fact that he didn't know the rhyme. That's astounding. That's astonishing. That's like taking, I don't know, Clayton Kershaw, one of the leading pitchers right now in baseball, and asking him who Greg Maddux, Tom Seaver, Sandy Koufax, Satchel Paige, ask him who they are, and I guarantee you that he knows. That's sort of how the tradition goes, that you come up through something, you pass through across the quote-unquote burning sands, and that equips you to stand in that moment in that place. But here we have not even 20 years haven't expired, and we have artists who don't know lyrics from what was, you know, the greatest songs that their entire career is predicated and built upon. So I think that we need to go back to basics. We need to, in many ways, have a, and I know that this will never occur, we need to have a intervention in regards to the radio. And maybe we need to only play songs from the period of the golden age of hip-hop for a good year. However, at the exact same time, we have a situation where in the midst of this mediocrity, we do have MCs like Lupe Fiasco. We got Big Crit, who are actually doing some things that are very worthy and very notable, who should be getting commercial play, should be being celebrated, because they truly are the best of what we have right now within the pop culture. And I yield with that, Clint.
Well, how are we going to get Big Crit to come on the air?
You know, I think we just go ahead and we ask him. We send a request and, you know, and we just simply, quite simply ask him, you know. It's like every other thing, you know. I can guarantee you that a figure such as that would really jive very well with China Returns.
Well, I'm going to put that in the air now. I don't know if you want to ask him or I'll ask him. But we also got confirmation from Brother Jay. He's willing to come on as well. But, you know, you know how that conversation went. But I'm going to reach out to him again, too. And I even have a distant, like a 6 degrees of separation with KRS-One through the Hip Hop Collective. So, you know, if hip-hop is going to be our tool, I say we can't waste another day not using it, Dr. Jones. We just can't.
Well, but the problem is, and this is the thing that I would question, is hip-hop the tool? That would be because we don't control it anymore. And that would be probably my greatest thing. You know, it's a phenomenal cultural tool, but we don't control it. It's no longer in our hands. And one of the most unfortunate aspects of it is, quite simply, that our people would even fight us as we attempted to get control of it again. And that's truly one of the saddest aspects of everything that we're talking about, that oftentimes the most significant and substantial resistance that we receive is going to be from our very people. So I'm not even certain, you know, if that's the path to go forward. You know, it's, for me, indicative of how poor Black leadership is right now at this very moment, that we're looking at figures like Carmelo Anthony, Michael Jordan, and what have you, as if they have something, some understanding, let alone something to say in regards to racial matters in the USA. I'm going to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be damned if hip-hop don't belong to us still. The only reason why it doesn't is because we've allowed our power to be taken away. But it's like, even I'm hearing, you know, the kind of talk that we have here on Sign of the Times and in dialogues, you know, through with our friends and family and things like that. I'm starting to hear that kind of talk from people who have never spoken that way before. So I say we take advantage of that energy and use it to our advantage. So, you know, I have to respectfully disagree that hip-hop, we no longer control hip-hop. I think if we, you know, demanded our control back, that it would definitely happen. And we're seeing that even by using hip-hop as a tool to address the state and mass incarceration through the hip-hop collective. So, you know, we are using hip-hop to, in a sense, take our power back, and that's exactly, you know, what we've agreed that hip-hop means, is healing our people through infinite, higher infinite power. So, I think unless we try it, we'll never know. Unless we actually get out here and begin to do the things that we talk about and begin to counteract, whether it be through positive images, positive words, positive affirmations, you know, every little bit counts towards building, if you will, that momentum of love that we so desperately need, and it creates an environment of healing. And you're right, people will pick up on it. Like you said, I believe you said it was your uncle, when he walked into the room, you can feel a certain presence about him. Well, more of us can carry that presence should we choose to, should we decide to tap into it. So, you know, I do believe that we owe it to ourselves to take not only hip-hop back, but our education system back, our political system back, our overall spirituality back. And when you talked about initially, you know, addressing Black culture, I was confused. I'm like, you know, what Black culture? You know, all I see is us consistently asking our people to wake the fuck up. And a lot of us are simply choosing not to, out of convenience or, you know, monetary gain, meritorious manumission. You know, those people that we talked about with the reality TV, with, you know, popular rap, you know, they are practicing meritorious manumission. They're being rewarded for tearing up our people, and we wouldn't be right if we didn't hold them accountable to our standards of sincerity, integrity, and accountability, and operating in an atmosphere of love and mutual respect. You know, we would be letting our own selves down. So are we being in that clean glass if that be the case? And I yield.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of that, I hear everything that you're saying, but, you know, from my perspective, the truth of the matter is that when you're talking about reaching the masses of our people, especially in a very succinct and potent way, you need the radio waves, you need the airwaves and what have you. And the truth of the matter is that what we know as independent, authentic hip-hop is not being played there. Mm-hmm. You're not playing it. They're playing Young Thug. They're not playing Lupe. They're playing Rich Homie Quan. Okay? And those messages that are being repeatedly put out over there over and over and over and over again are damaging to our community, damaging to our soul, damaging to our psyche. And what ultimately ends up happening is that because that is where the majority of our people, especially as they're younger, are hearing hip-hop. It's on the video shows. It's on the radio and what have you. That brand of hip-hop ultimately becomes the standard of what hip-hop actually is. Now, of course, we have some underground MCs and what have you, but the truth of the matter is that when you're looking at what we did in the late 80s, they were playing Fight the Power on the radio. Okay, mm-hmm. The Enemy was played on the radio, Boogie Down Productions, X-Clan was played on the radio, Grand Verbalizer, Funkin' Lesson, Brother J. And what I'm saying is that right now, although we may have been the originators, the creators of this thing that we know as hip-hop, we probably couldn't be righteously considered to be it as a tool within our hands right now. So I yield with that.
Well, a friend of and I are going to be on Thursday. Boris Franklin, he's very familiar with hip-hop culture, very experienced in the area of media. And so I'm going to send you a friend suggestion with him. And this is exactly what we're going to dialogue about on Thursday night, because he was saying the same thing when he and I talked. It, you know, he was saying that he and some of his homies were picking it, talking about hip-hop and the importance of it in our community and how it still has the potential to have an impact, whether we, you know, change the frequency of it, whether we tap into positive lyrics, or, you know, what all that could possibly look like. And so we're going to start the dialogue on Thursday in speaking about the history of hip-hop and some of those artists that you talked about, Dr. Jones. We're going to play some of those artists on Thursday. But what I'm wondering, too, if, you know, it would be worth the investment maybe here on New Power Radio to maybe you create a log of, you know, true hip-hop, what you would consider hip-hop. And, you know, a couple of nights a week, we just spin it, you know, because there's nothing stopping us from making access of, you know, what we have. Just because we don't control mainstream media, that doesn't mean that we can't skin a cat another way. So, I mean, I'm willing to do that, you know, maybe on Saturdays or something like that. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a call-in dialogue type of thing. But if you want to come up with a list of hip-hop songs, and I'll go get them and record them and put them on, you know, like we do, I say we do that. I mean, at least that way, you know, we're putting it out there. We're putting it out into the atmosphere, and you never know, you know, what may come back in return. What do you think about that idea? Dr. Jones, did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. I'm still here. Could you repeat
okay.
that for me?
Did you hear me?
No, it broke up on me.
Okay, I apologize. What I was saying is that on Thursday night, Boris Franklin and I are going to start the dialogue about hip-hop and using it as a tool in our communities, because he was saying that he had this same type of dialogue with others in the community, you know, some of his homies, and he wanted to roll it out, you know, and on Thursday night, we're going to start to play some of those you know, original hip-hop joints, if you will, and talk about them and talk about what was going on in society when those joints came out. And so I was asking you, what do you think about maybe you putting together a list of hip-hop joints that you know are, you know, culturally conscious, you know, could have an impact even still today. If you would put together some of that music, I could go get it and re-record it, you know, like we always do when we play anything here on Sign of the Times and New Power Radio, and put it out there and start playing it and start, you know, challenging others to listen. And maybe that might spark some conversations that could lead to other conversations where we do use hip-hop as a tool to bring our people together. And I asked you, what did you think about that idea?
You know, I think that it's a wonderful idea. The only problem that I would have with that is that if you play the stuff that I know, you know, you're going to turn the earth off its axis. I don't know if black folk are really ready to hear what it is that I actually listen to. That's one of the frequent jokes between me and my students. You know, they're kind of like, what in the world is it that you be listening to? Because I always have my headphones on as I walk around campus. And I'm like, yo, if you only knew, you know, what it is that I listen to. But one of the things that I would, I will definitely do that for you. I'll start doing it tonight. But at the exact same time, let's try and expand. I would argue for trying to expand their minds beyond just hip hop to understanding all of African American culture, and that's dealing with, you know, the idea of funk music, the idea of R&B. They need to know, and this is my favorite jazz person in the world, they need to know who Terrence Blanchard is. You know, and I would challenge everyone before you go to sleep tonight to listen to Terrence Blanchard's recording of Over There. It is a surreal, will take you somewhere that you ain't never been before type of thing. They need to know in a sentimental mood. They need to know who Najee is, John Coltrane, Louis Armstrong, because all of that is our culture. And really what we're talking about is recalibrating and in many ways inundating and drowning our people in the best of our culture, the absolute best. And it's like, you know, one of the things people repeatedly ask me, they're like, yo, what is it that you need to write? And I'm like, yo, I need a vanilla candle burning. I need for my workspace to be clean. And I need to have jazz music with no words playing. And I'm in my groove right there. So, yeah, I definitely think that that's a great thing to do. You know, it's amazing how so many of our people they've never, you know, heard the individuals that we consider to be the very pillars and foundation of hip-hop. They've never heard Brand Nubian, Poor Righteous Teachers, you know. I was amazed. I had some students who had never heard Illmatic. They've never heard Nas. You know, so we definitely need to move our people back to understanding that this is what hip-hop is. This is what it sounds like. This is what it feels like. This is what you feel like after you finish listening to it. That's a positive thing. That's something that I'll definitely applaud and definitely try and call in and listen to.
Ashe, yeah. And to Dr. Jones, as far as, like, how we have lost a certain portion of our culture that would often be displayed through music. A lot of the extracurricular activities like music have been removed from our public school system. And even though we have a lot of talented individuals in our community who, play their own instruments and things like that, that is something that, you know, I guess our generation, well, I'm a little older than you, but our generation grew up, you know, and music was a requirement. Our generation grew up and, you know, a lot of our friends were in band or were in some sort of, I guess, a creative outlet other than even what was required of them. And so, you know, as the public school system gotten away from music and appreciation of it and making sure that our children were being taught, so have we. And so, you know, maybe eventually the conversation that we're sparking through hip-hop, through reclaiming our power, through...
Hello?
Uh-oh, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
All right, folks, it looks like we got some technical difficulties. I'm gonna play this real quick, and we're going to go ahead and probably wrap up early tonight. It seems like we're having some problems connecting. Are we going we gonna kick it?
If you really need a hug, Afrocentric living is a big shrug. A life filled with, that's what I love. A lower plateau is what we're above. If you diss us, we won't even think of. We'll nipper the dog and give a big shove. This rhythm really fits like a snug glove. Like a box of positives, it's a plus love. As the tribe flies high like a dove.
favor. Boy, this track really has a lot of flavor. When it comes to rhythms, Quest is your savior. Follow us for the funky behavior. Make a note on the rhythm we gave you. Feel free, drop your pants, yank your hair. Do you like the garments that we wear? I instruct you to be the obeyer. A rhythm recipe that you'll savor. Doesn't matter if you're minor or major. Yes, the tribe of the game with a player. As you inhale like a breath of fresh air.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back, Dr. Jones.
All right, I got kicked off or something, so I decided to call in, and it was Tribe Called Quest, so that's a good thing.
I say. Yeah, Blog Talk's been really unpredictable. It's strange that we start to have in-depth conversations. The last time that happened, it knocked the whole list of people off the queue. Was when we were discussing AAES, the All African Empowerment Society, and it completely knocked me off to the point where I had to call the 917 number to log back into my own broadcast. It said I was still in the on the host line. So Blog Talk Radio has been very unpredictable, and that to me is more of an inspiration for us to have our own shit. So if anybody knows of any other avenue that's similar to Blog Talk Radio that is up and running that would welcome New Power Radio Network and Sign of the Times and all of our hosts, please let me know. So, Dr. Jones, you know, how do you want to, prelude into, close, wrap up tonight's conversation and prelude into tomorrow?
Well, you know, the thing is that we've talked about the idea of culture. And all of the different facets of culture, and the fact that we need to really understand that culture is in many ways like a nuclear bomb that's being sent around to different lands and exploding and touching everyone in that land. Unfortunately for us, our nuclear bomb that we've been able to send out to foreign lands has been one that has in many ways damaged the brand of what it means to be an African-American and what have you. So I think that following that exact same vein and that exact same thought, and this is also flowing from something that I'm dealing with kind of personally, I'm trying to find out exactly what I am right now politically. And I think that it might be very beneficial for us to look at the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and also Malcolm's position upon this idea of the content of our character. What is it that we need to be paying attention to in regards to our character? You know, so often we seem to give away our agency, our ability to uplift ourselves by blaming the quote-unquote man, this elusive, invisible man who has so much power to keep us distracted and to keep us down. So I think that maybe for the first hour, I would like to talk about the content of our character as far as what King and Malcolm would say, and then spend the second hour talking about definitive solutions to help our people mobilize their minds collectively and begin to organize our political power and also our economic might.
That sounds good. That sounds really good. I know we talked about looking at other political options, if you will, to the Democratic and Republican parties. Because, you know, I used to be active with the local Democratic Party to the point where, you know, I was precinct chair for my community. And after attending only about, I guess, about 4 to 5 meetings where it was clear that the Democratic Party is bought, sold, and paid for. They are Republicans in sheep's clothing, and it's the same way with a lot of our agencies who have historically advocated for voting for representation of the Black community. The NAACP here in Cincinnati is run by the Jewish community because, you know, people did it under the auspices of being inclusive to the point where it's unrecognizable anymore. And it's gone through a lot of turmoil and a lot of changes. So, you know, definitely it's quite timely. You know, there are a lot of people who are saying they're writing in Black Lives Matter for president. I mean, it's just, we got a lot of work to do. And I guess, you know, beyond it starting with us, it definitely needs to be inclusive of everyone in our community that's willing to listen and to be a part of the solution. So if anyone would like to have a question or a comment before we close, I want to remind you to please push 1. If you are listening on your computer, the number to dial is 917-889-8059. 917-889-8059. And I just want to say this, that it's disappointing to see, you know, so many callers listening. It's good to see so many callers listening, but it's disappointing in the fact that a lot of them don't voice their opinions because, hey, Dr. Jones and I could be completely wrong and flying off our asses. But the only way we're going to know that is if you challenge us or question us or contribute to some of the things that we said. So, you know, I just want to keep reiterating the fact that we are all a part of the answer that we're looking for. And so thank you, Dr. Jones, you know, for your time and commitment. Thank you for your willingness to turn Wednesday nights back into a dialogue night and giving me the option of continuing to have the listening sessions, because I do believe that they are a part of our learning curve, if you will. And to be honest, I just want to get more people involved. And so, you know, I appreciate you giving up your Wednesday night to be a part of Sign of the Times and your Tuesday nights, as you have been since we started this whole thing. So, I want to yield back to you for any closing remarks, and then we're going to go ahead and close it out for the night.
Okay. You know, the thing is that we have to continue to grow. We have to continue to move. The great Howard Zinn once said it this way, that you can't be neutral on a moving train. And rest assured that this train is always moving, and you're either going forward or you're going backwards. One of the things that I would like to reiterate is what Queen just said. You know, we definitely like to interact with listeners, with people who call in and what have you. You know, I person who loves to learn, and believe it or not, I learn so much more by listening than I do by talking. That was reiterated and taught to me by my grandparents and also my parents. And so I'm always very eager to engage and to listen to what people are saying. And I guess the other thing that I would say before we close is that tomorrow night when we do deal with King and Malcolm as well, I would like to also have a few moments to also deal with the reality that it is time for African Americans to develop their own independent political vehicle. And now I'm not saying develop a full-fledged political party, but I'm talking about developing a political vehicle that is able to, number one, develop a African-American agenda, and number two, take that agenda and approach every candidate that's running and give them, number one, a notification of what it is that we desire, and number two, also remind them that we have millions of votes that we could collectively throw to whichever candidate that we so choose. So Looking forward to tomorrow. Love you all, and, you know, peace.
All right. We love you too, Dr. Jones. We will see you tomorrow night here on Sign of the Times, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Peace.